Cheers Cast is part of the Fire and Water Network.
You should do it, Carla.
Look, I know I'm a good waitress. I don't need some obnoxious dork in a cheap suit telling me I'm the best.
But you are the best.
I just said I didn't need that.
You wanna go where everybody knows your name.
Hello and welcome back to Cheers Cast, the podcast where everybody knows your name. I'm your host, Ryan Daly, and coming back to the show from the Front Row Podcast Network, please welcome back regular guest Brandon Davis. What's up, Brandon?
Hey, Ryan. Good to see you. How's it going?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. Thank you. Thank you for coming back.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, any for Cheers, anytime.
Now I hope that you have personal warmth and courtesy and memorization skills for this episode.
Yeah. As long as Sam doesn't get his way and we have a bikini contest, we should be okay.
It's an audio only.
Podcast. Yeah, that's true. Absolutely. But no, yeah. Personal warmth and courtesy always.
Yeah. Those will shine through.
Yeah.
And folks, the reason we're talking about that is because it is time for the annual Miss Boston Barmaid competition this episode. You know, that thing that happened once way back in season one. Yeah, because we're on season 9, episode 21, Carla Loves Klavan. This one written by Dan Staley and Rob Long, directed by James Burrows, who has a cameo in this episode, actually. And the original air date was Thursday, March 21st, 1991. Cheers is getting to host the Miss Boston Barmaid competition, and Sam should be excited about that, but he is dismayed by the new judging criteria, which emphasizes things like efficiency and congeniality over how hot the waitress is. Carla has no interest in entering the contest until she finds out the winner gets a brand new sports car. She also finds the top secret list of judges and reasons that if she can be extra nice to those people, she can be her regular self to everyone else. Sounds great, except one of the judges is Cliff Klavan. Cliff puts Carla to the ultimate test, asking her to perform loathsome, nauseating acts like rubbing his back and feet, and Carla painfully obliges. When the contest starts, however, Carla discovers that Cliff isn't one of the judges. He tricked her just so that she would have to be nice to him. Was that a suicidal prank? Perhaps. But Carla postpones her revenge to compete in the barmaid competition, which by all rights she deserves to win based on her speed, efficiency, and competence. Unfortunately, the world doesn't reward that kind of thing, and the judges give the award to the blondest, bubbliest, dumbest waitress in the group. At least Sam is happy about that. All right, Brandon, what'd you think about this one?
This is such an interesting episode because I think so much, first of all, it's hilarious. I said that to you before we recorded, but I think it hinges on the fact that we have seen at this point almost a decade of hatred between Carla and Cliff.
Yeah.
And so it really is kind of a nice payoff to all of that. And so if you didn't have that history with the three, if we haven't been through, 200 some episodes already of her just insulting him and him creeping her out and all that stuff, I don't know that it would be as funny. But this is why when a show gets to be this this much of, in terms of its veteran status and in terms of having age behind it, you can really do episodes like this because it pays off. And you also hit it. It's fun that they decided to bring back the Miss Boston Barmaid contest when we haven't seen it since season one. But it's, once again, it's a funny, nice turn, because if you think back to that episode, it's all about how Diane had these superior morals of why, contests like this shouldn't be run. And in this episode, it's Sam for completely shallow reasons.
Yeah, opposing it for the opposite reasons. Yeah. I love it. On one hand, Sam is very one-dimensional and just almost like kind of like juvenile and just just like overemphasizing like the looks department and everything. Like that's all he cares about. Like, but feels a kind of righteous indignation about the situation that kind of makes it a little bit funnier than it should be.
Yeah, no, it's funny. Ted Danson, it was so... was so adept at doing that, especially in the later seasons when, Sam's IQ and libido fluctuate so much.
Right, right.
You know, in the first few seasons, Sam was a hound, but he still had a brain.
Right, right.
And so in these later episodes, it's just like these brain cells just keep frying more and more as time goes on until you get to the end of season 11 and it deepens sort of the whole meaning of it again. But, no, it's just so funny how, this episode he's really just used as kind of the, he's really sort of the over the top comedic relief in this episode, but Ted Danson's great at it. So I don't mind it.
The teaser for this one, Norm, he's back to his painting gig.
I know. They circle back around to that again.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. Like two episodes ago, I think it was, when Vera lost her job and Norm had to hurry up and find her work because God knows he wasn't going to.
Yeah.
He's coming out of the office with Rebecca and he's negotiating that he will repaint the entire office. And quotes her the figure of $400. And she's like, yeah, $400. That sounds reasonable. And Norm is quick to point out, no, 400 beers. It's like the B with a slant line through it. That's his special currency. Like he wrote that down. It's just like adding to his tab. Now, remember this bit, folks, because at the end of this episode, when I talk about Norm's tab, this kind of threw a wrench into my whole calculation system that I had to adapt to.
I bet. And you know, this teaser, it's very simple. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of, it's not as, laugh out loud as some of the others or as funny, but this has got a payoff at the end of the episode.
Yeah.
It's really one of those teasers that really sets up some exposition that you need for later on in the show. So once in a while they get these in.
Because Norm is like sits down, he starts showing Rebecca, color samples. What does she want? Just something simple, like an off-white type. So he shows her sand white, ivory white, Navajo white, and Rebecca thinks they all look kind of the same. And Norm swears they're not. They're different. And he's not just pushing one color, and he's a little bit offended at her accusation. She's like, oh, I'm sorry. I'll go with this one. This one looks good. And he's like, oh, that's a good choice. Cream white. I like that one. And then he kind of clicked. He's like, and as it happens, I've got 42 gallons of it in my garage. So this bit almost triggered me a little bit because when I was in college, I had a summer job painting schools, the local high school and some of the elementary schools in this school district. And Navajo white was the color for every room, every hallway. I painted so much damn Navajo white that I closed my eyes and that color was just burned into me.
Oh, good Lord.
So when Norm mentioned it, I was like, not again. After the opening credits, we come back and not a lot of time has passed, but it's we're still in the same time. Sam comes in and they're like, hey, good morning, Sam. He's like, well, what's good about it? And Frazier was like, well, you have your health and good business and friends who put up with your violent mood swings. And Sam, this is where he delivers basically the premise of this one. He got the bad news about the Miss Boston Barmaid contest. He should be happy because Cheers gets to host it. But the new criteria says that waitresses will be judged on, good stuff, as he's talking about this, Carla is kind of complaining that, the contest should be about the most efficient, most talented waitress who can do the job the best. But surprise, surprise, the winner is always, she says, the woman with the biggest honeydews.
Yeah. Carla has so many euphemisms for, the female, the female breastbone, I should say. And I think this might be the first time she has said honeydews.
That's a good one. Yeah, just the wordplay and the visual. Yeah, it's a good euphemism there.
It really is.
Carla for that one. And Sam, he points out though that's not the case anymore. They changed the criteria. Now they're judging the criteria is speed, courtesy, memorization, personal warmth. And he's like, it's like bra size doesn't even matter anymore.
And he says it with such such wistfulness and hopelessness.
Yeah. And Frazier, I didn't think about this was 35 years ago. But Frazier points out, they're trying to keep pace with the current social enlightenment. How would you like to be judged based on your looks and body alone, Sam? He goes, I'd love it. I'd win. you know, Sam, you know, he actually visited the contest committee and protested these new rules and argued the case. He shows them a chart, a graph that has all of the winners since 1976. And to a woman, all of their bust sizes are like over 38 or something like that. He shows, and he's showing them the list. And if you look at the graph, it kind of charts up and down a little wavelength toward the top. And then there's a noticeable dip. And then it goes back into the thing. Woody points out what the audience would be pointing out. He's like, what's this one that dips way down here? And Sam kind of looks at it. He's like, oh, yeah, that's the year Diane won.
Diane won. And this is the period of time where the show tries to do as many digs to the character of Diane and Shelley Long as they can.
And I mean, you pointed out earlier, like, the whole gist of this episode rewards the longtime viewers that have seen Carla torture Cliff over seasons and seasons. But this is also one that reminds you, hey, remember 5 seasons ago when we had Diane and everything like that? We're still making fun of that character.
Yeah, well, you know what? And watching this again, I had to pause it when I was watching. And I think it's not quite clear, but if you look close enough, I'm like, he has the year that Diane was in the contest as, because I looked at the episode, was in 83, but he has it as 84. 84, so they got a year wrong at some point. But I mean, it's still funny either way, especially just the visual of that. But no, it's, I mean, that is, I just think it's funny that they decided to return to the well of that episode. Cause I, you know, it's a fine episode, but I still, you know, it's not in my top 5 or maybe even top 10 of my season 1 episodes in terms of my favorites, but it is funny to bring that back around, because I guess they wanted to see what it would be like if Carla had entered this contest, because they hadn't explored that before.
Right, because even though it is an annual Boston Barmaid contest, you think, oh, they could have done this every season, but it's not like the Bar Wars, like, rivalry with Gary's. And it's also one of those things, like, how many times could they do this, like, episode? Like, especially since after Diane, there's only one waitress throughout the show. They can't do this all the time. But
it's held a different location, so it's not always held in Cheers. Right. So that makes sense too.
Yeah. They could argue that, you know, maybe, I mean, well, Carla actually points out that she wouldn't enter the contest. She doesn't. Mm-hmm. She objects to it. But
correct.
But I just love the way Sam's kind of like, oh, yeah, that's the year that Diane won. A grumbling, like, acceptance, like, yeah, that one kind of blows, like, that's the outlier. That's the one thing that kind of ruins my point.
But, right.
And then Carla, you know, she's not interested in the contest this year. And even though Woody reminds her, well, Sam just said it's not about looks this time. She lets Woody go with that one. And she says she knows that she's the best. She doesn't need some dweeb in a suit telling her so. And Frasier's like, you are the best. And she's like, I just said I didn't need that.
Everybody in this episode, even if they don't get a lot to do, they do. And this is another one of those. And we've talked about a couple of these episodes together where even the ones that are kind of peripheral in the background, they all get at least one or two laugh out loud moments on their own.
Yeah. And then, you know, like Norm points out that, you know, if she wins, she gets a brand new Mazda Miata. And that changes her tune right away. Now, I didn't actually write down or copy exactly what it said, but IMDb trivia mentioned something like the year that this was filmed or when this was coming out, the Mazda Miata was like the number one highly most anticipated car of that year, or like bestseller. So that was a big deal for the winner to go. Although the winner in the first year, we got a trip to Bermuda.
Diane got a trip to Bermuda.
Yeah.
Which she freaked out about.
Right. That's when she lost all of her, you know, moral, you know, fortitude against.
Yeah.
And even, like, this is the thing that Carla, you know, she has this, you know, objects to this on principles until she sees what she could win. And then.
Right.
And then we got a great little bit. It's days later. Norm is sitting at his usual seat, but now he is in his painter whites, you know, the white pants and white shirt, sipping his beer. And Rebecca notes that he's just been sitting there all day drinking. Norm is like, hi, I'm Norm Peterson. Obviously, we haven't met yet. But Rebecca is actually, she's really bothered that he's not doing his job. He's just sitting there talking to Cliff. He's like, Rebecca, do you get Cheers?
Cheers. That's one of my favorite lines in the episode.
Do you understand it?
You know what's interesting to me also about this is that, you know, I talked about them using Ted Danson differently, but at this point, after the whole Robin Colcord thing, the character Rebecca, they use Kirstie Alley in ways that they need her. One, because one week she's like this, she's the hard ass boss again and is really, trying to make everybody toe the line. Then in another week, she's a blithering idiot again. Mm-hmm. And then the next week, she's kind of a combination of both. So once again, it's always like they kind of, because Kirstie Alley, like Ted Danson, is so versatile, they use her in the capacity that she's needed in each episode.
Yeah. I mean, as the point that I've made before, like, I don't know that they ever really figured out what to do with her for a while after that.
That's true.
But again, to your point, she's so good. She's so funny that they can kind of use her as almost a utility player, like whatever the plot calls for.
Yeah,
they can
absolutely
have her fill that in. So, she is kind of playing the role of bar manager. Like the fact that she's the one, even though she says it's Sam's office and this is what Sam wants, the fact that she's the one behind all this. This episode could have been in season 7 or 8.
I was saying at some point she's almost like season 6 Rebecca, and this is almost like she's humorless at some point. And some of it too. So yeah, it's interesting, and I think probably because of maybe I'm just thinking that because of Norm going back to the painting aspect, because that was such a big part of his storyline in season 6 too. It's kind of a throwback a little bit.
Yeah. And Norm has this new Norm says, he can procrastinate because he has this brand new industrial strength paint sprayer that can do the entire office in an hour. And he talks about how it was created by the Japanese to improve their efficiency. Whereas Norm, as Fraser points out, will use it to procrastinate until the last minute. Norm's like, yeah, of course, the Japanese, they're way ahead of us in technology, but they don't have our creativity. Carla comes out wearing what Fraser describes as a jaunty bow, this big lime green bow on her head. And she talks about how her first job was at the Greasy Spoon when she was only 15. And the old waitress there, Cora, taught her everything she knows about waiting tables, kind of her mentor. And she gave her that bow on her last day when she left, they dragged her away to the nursing home or something. And it reminds her every day to kind of that waiting tables is an honorable profession. And Fraser's moved by the story, and he's like, oh, that's really touching. She's like, well, now if the judges are as sappy as you, I get a brand new car.
And Rhea Perlman, she was great at delivering that. Because we as audience members almost buy it too.
Yeah, it's legit enough. here the part that we kind of like need to see is Sam says he will root for Carla despite his moral qualms with the contest.
Said in a very like Diane-ish type tone, but for a totally different reason.
Exactly. And she has a button that says, hi, my name is Carla and I love your smile. Sam's like, wow, you're really prepared to go all the way for this. She's like, yeah, I've got a button that says that too.
So great. And the visual of Rhea Perlman in that bow is also very funny. And just a little out of character. And it's always funny when we get to see Carla try and be civil because it just feels so out of place.
Speaking of, she goes to wait on a very just rude and unpleasant customer who orders a very dry martini, and he spells it for her, D-R-Y. With a twist instead of an olive. And she's like, okay, coming up. And he makes her read it back to him. And he corrects her when she forgets about the twist part. And she kind of walks back to the other side of the bar and immediately pushes Cliff off of his stool. He's like, what'd you do that for? She's like, I had to blow off some steam. He's like, why didn't you push Norm off his stool? You don't know much about physics, do you?
It's a great visual. And it pays off again later on, of course.
Right. And she's like, if she's going to be congenial, if she's going to be friendly and be warm to the customers, she needs to see the Mazda brochure again. She needs that visual reminder to ensure that she gives good service and that it's all worth the effort. Mm-hmm. And when they are looking at the brochure again, Woody finds the list of judges, which is supposed to be top secret. So now Carla figures that she can just cater to those specific people and forget about everybody else. And Woody's like, yeah, the judges are David Murphy, Cliff Clavin, and Frank Smith.
And yeah, she smashes the tray over her head.
Yeah, just like slowly just like flexing as it's like building in like kinetic energy, and just just smashes the tray down on her head, and it just shatters to pieces, and she storms off, and Woody just terrified. He's like, who is Frank Smith and why is Carla so mad at him?
Oh man, leave it to Woody Harrelson every time to the visual was funny enough of Carlin, just the reveal of Clavin being a judge, and then to just give him that final button line on that scene was just perfect.
Yeah, Woody has, like, again, he doesn't have much to do in this episode, but he's got one little hangover story, and it's priceless. But it's a little bit later, and she's wondering how the committee could pick Clavin. And, well, he spends a lot of time in bars. And she's like, well, so does Norm. Why didn't they pick Norm? Mm-hmm. He's just kind of sitting there. Just maybe they did pick me. I haven't opened my mail in a while. Like, once the unemployment ran out.
Once the unemployment ran out.
Yeah. Sam understands that, this is really upsetting for Carla. And he's like, it just seems like everything was so much better when it was just a bimbo contest.
He's one joke all the way through this episode. And yet every time he does it, it's funny because he's able to do it from a different, it's the same joke, but just done from a different angle every time.
Right. Because this time it's like, if this is the new age of enlightenment, how come it hurts so many
so
people?
So much.
as kind of Cliff is like wandered away, Carla kind of pulls Norm aside, and she's like, over the years, I've done a lot of bad things to Cliff, called him names, punctured his tires, set fire to his hair once. And she asked Norm, do you think Cliff noticed? And I love this, Norm, because they could have gone back to the well of any of the things that she's actually done, but they bring up something that we've never seen.
The one that I always think of that pops in my head, and you and I talked about it, was the one where the stork brings a crane when he's been arrested for stalking the mayor, and Norm just talks about how Carla just went to poke things at him through the bars in jail. Yeah.
But Norm is like, Carla, you made this guy eat a bug once. Now that's bad, but let's top it. Norm says, that's a birthday he's not going to forget. Now that's bad, but let's top it again. It's like, the bug laid eggs in his stomach. He just keep ratcheting up how awful this was.
Yeah. And then what does she say? Yeah, that was actually a bonus something like that.
Like, that was pretty good. I'm proud of that one. So. But she's bummed out because this was going to be her one opportunity to win. And Norm recommends maybe she try being nice to Cliff, try listening to his stories. Mm-hmm. In that moment, we get Cliff wandering in from the pool room with Paul Crapins, our third man now.
Yeah.
Cliff is saying, and that is the history of Western civilization in a nutshell. And he's, you were right to come to me with the question, Paul. And he's like, I didn't come to you, Cliff. I was standing in line to use the phone.
Oh, man. And this is what, I do love, the addition of Paul in this is great because he, once again, he's also utilized in the way that they need him to, where he can be kind of almost a Clavin-ish type character that everyone is kind of annoyed with. But then he can also be kind of more of the, he can be more of a Norm type character, mm-hmm. who more leans toward that side. He kind of just juggles back and forth between the two kind of personas as well.
Right. His rank in the hierarchy and in the pecking order isn't firmly defined yet. So
no,
they get more flexibility because
it gets more defined in season 11, I think, but not here yet.
Yeah. For various reasons. Yeah. But Carla, she acts interested. She wants to hear more of Cliff's stories. That's when Paul is kind of like, are you feeling okay, Carla? He's like, that doesn't sound good. And he's almost like going to like touch her head to check for a fever. And she just bats him away. She's like, get out of here. Like, what does she call him? Lard butt or something?
Lard butt.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, good. You're fine. <It's> like, and, Carla, she denies she's not mean to Cliff. And he's like, what about when you knocked me off my stool? And she's like, that was just an affectionate nudge, you silly Billy. And
she's silly Billy.
And she forces herself to laugh in front of Cliff and then turns her back to look at Norm. And just this look of utter like just shame and disgust on her face. But Norm just points to the Mazda catalog, and she forces the smile back. It's a great little blocking bit with the visual on her face. You know, she's like, "What can I do for you, Cliff?" And he's like, "Well, you know, when you pushed me, it kind of hurt my back, you know." Yeah, you could, you know, and she's like, "Well, let me get you a heating pad," or, you know, this is Doane's pills, which I've seen these, but I don't know if I've ever heard it said aloud. Like when she said that, I was like, "What brand is that, Doane's pills?" And then I actually had to look it up, and I was like, "Oh yeah, I've seen these." Like, why did I just a weird disconnect there?
Yeah, it really is.
And he's like, "No, I'd rather have a back rub." So she does it. She starts rubbing his back, and her face just a mask of disgust and horror. And he's like, "Why don't we go back to the office and I'll take my shirt off and you can really get your fingers in." And
oh, just the visual of that makes you cringe. John Ratzenberger is so good at making us just disgusted by Cliff at times. And I think that is what is so great about the Carla Cliff relationship is that, yeah, you do feel bad that Carla bullies Cliff so much, but he just makes it so easy by being so disgusting sometimes or being so odd that where we can laugh at both of them the same.
Yeah. As after they disappear into the office, Rebecca comes back and she's getting madder at Norm. She's like, "Why aren't you painting?" He's like, I would be in there right now painting the office, except Carla is in there giving Cliff a massage. Gosh. And Rebecca's just incredulous. Like, "You expect me to believe that?" And she opens the door and we don't see it, but you just see her just stop. She's like, "Oh dear."
Yeah. and Kirstie Alley delivers that just in a very dry, droll way, but it's so great.
Yeah. Just like this, just utter regret that like she could have gone her entire life without ever seeing that.
And what I love is that they don't show us the audience. We get to imagine it, and we can just imagine just how it is through Kirstie Alley's reaction too.
Right. And she walks away, she's like, "Now, Norm, if you could just get the rest of the office half as white as Cliff's upper body."
That's a great line.
Carla comes out completely an emotional wreck, and she has to get Cliff a beer and 7 pretzels with the salt brushed off one side, and she's just like crying. She can't do this. She can't go through it. And Frasier's like, "Try and visualize something else while you're doing it. Put your mind in a different space and visualize something more pleasant." And she's like, "Oh, more pleasant, like a dead body with maggots and stuff." Like, oh. If that helps. So she goes back to the office just picturing maggots writhing around. Like, that's better. And here is our Woody moment, because Woody is impressed that Carla is catering to a judge to win, and he wishes he had done that when he took his prize pig Mirabelle to the county fairs. He said that that's all politics, you know, it's all about, you know, sucking up and who do you know, but he never schmoozed. He never, you know, got down to that level. It ended up hurting him because he ended up bringing Mirabelle back home a loser. And he's like, "Yeah, it broke my heart." Frasier asking, like, "Well, how was Mirabelle?" And Woody, not even really pausing, just, "Not bad with applesauce."
With applesauce. It's one of the shortest Hanover stories, but I think it's one of the funniest.
Yeah, it's just like you just see there's like a ghost of a look on Frasier's face as it's kind of dawning on it, like, "Oh, mm-hmm. I should have known that." But also, I think Woody might be a sociopath. Like the way he's talking about this prize pig, like it was a friend, it was family, somebody that he cared about, somebody that he named, somebody that he actually invested this emotion in. But what happens when she loses the contest? Oh, he killed her and ate her.
And the look that comes over Woody Harrelson's eyes when he does things like that. It is very, it's a slight switch, but it's there.
Yeah. It's not so incredible that he starred in Natural Born Killers 2 years
after. No, not at all. Not at all. He can make that switch very easily.
The door opens, Cliff and Carla come out there. Cliff comments Carla's strong peasant hands.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, she says that she only ever teased Cliff because she likes him. She's like, you know, like in third grade when you tease the kid you really have a crush on. And Cliff has this moment of realization. He's like, you mean the whole time she really liked me? Like he went to a different place in that moment.
I know he did.
You know, Cliff gets Carla to actually say that she likes him. And after that, she is just so pent up with rage, she needs to relieve her stress. So she pushes Frasier off of his stool. Pushes him hard, too.
And Kelsey Grammer just takes that prep fall and just, you know, takes it like a champ.
Yeah. And Cliff, sitting at the table, says, you know, she did such a good job on his back that now his feet are jealous. And he takes his shoes and socks off.
Takes his socks off. And the look of disgust, not just on Rhea Perlman's face, but on Kelsey Grammer's face as well, is just an incredible visual. I love it.
Yeah, and he spares her the effort and throws himself off the chair again, off the stool. Later, by now, we actually get to the contest. And Carla's rubbing her hands in kerosene.
She wants a match.
She wants a match. It's not enough. Norm's like, come on, it couldn't have been that bad. She's like, oh, yeah. She's like, I didn't look, but I'm pretty sure I felt six toes on his left foot.
they work in like every possible, like, you know, Cliff is, you know, repulsive mm-hmm. joke as they can. And it's just, it's fun. But once again, it's just at this point in the series, because we know both characters so well, we just go along with it, we buy it, and it works.
Yeah. We get the MC who calls all the contestants and judges up to the front of the bar. The MC is played by Dante DiLoretto, who only has 6 acting credits on IMDb, but he has a lot of television producer credits, which doesn't surprise me. Like, just kind of looking at him and listening to him, it's like he looks like a Hollywood producer in the 80s and 90s.
Oh, he definitely does. Absolutely. Yeah. He's got that kind of sleek, showbizzy look about him.
Yeah, yeah. But he does a good job as the MC, and like after he calls him over, and this is where I point out that one of the judges who doesn't get a line or anything, he's just kind of in the background with the group, is played by James Burrows, the director. Carla, you know, tells the MC, she's like, hang on, I'll get the other judge. And he's like, what other judge? She's like, Cliff Clavin. He's like, I don't know who that is. And she shows him the judges list that she got, and he's like, this isn't an official thing from the committee. I think somebody was pulling a prank on you. And she turns on Cliff and zeroes in on him. And he's like asking her to, like, you know, get the comb for his mustache. He's still got some crumbs in there. And she throws her towel around his neck. Like she's going to pull him over the thing and like strangle him. She's like, you set me up. You made up that list so I would have to be nice to you. And then you're like, contestant number one. And she kind of has to like switch back on to congeniality. She's like, yes. They're like, we're ready for you. And she's like, hang on. And she has this great moment. She's like, I have to go enter the contest now, Cliff. Why don't you meet your peace with God or make your peace with God?
And then my mindset is with Norm here. I'm just like, why in the world, you know, Cliff, after everything that Carla has done to her that we as the audience have seen and have not seen, which they've let us on, what would ever make him think that he would live after something like this?
Yeah. And Cliff just kind of, his piece is that, you know, he wasn't counting on surviving it. He's like, he accomplished something that could be remembered in the annals of history. Some people walk on the moon. Some people climb Mount Everest. He got Carla to rub his feet. And that's like, that's a feat that can never be surpassed. And it's like, he's like, you know, they'll be carving that on my tombstone. And he's like, yeah, you're going to need that really soon. As they're starting the contest, and the MC is like, again, you'll be judged on speed, memorization, drink knowledge, warmth. And you just hear this voice, this high voice from the crowd. What about the bikini round? No. And the MC just, we're well aware of your views, Mr. Malone. The man just comes out from under the bar, just kind of sulks and slinks away.
It's so good. So good.
In an episode with tons of great little moments, that one might be my home run, just because it's like the thing that I remember more about this episode than anything else. Like when I think about this episode, I think about Sam going, what about the bikini round? And the judge is like, shut up, Sam. We know who you are.
Because we've been made, you know, we've been made well known at this point that he has gone to meetings and protested.
And then we get like a quick little montage of the contest activities where the waitresses are, and we always get like a different waitress doing the activity and then Carla doing it better as she's like serving drinks. It's like sliding them down the bar. The way she puts olives in martinis by kind of like spinning them around and making it almost like a conveyor system. When a waitress tries to trip her while she's carrying her tray, she does like a cartwheel
with where she doesn't spill a single drink.
Yeah. And, but still manages to look back at the woman who tripped her and like give her a nasty look.
Yeah.
And it's clear that she's just blowing everybody in this contest away. And then they're like, we're going to announce the winner in a minute. She has to like kind of run up to Sam, and she's begrudgingly admits to Cliff that he kind of helped her because she channeled all of the energy she was going to put into killing him into doing her best job. And Cliff, of course, wants to take credit like this was his secret strategy. And then they announce the winner, and it's not Carla. It is Shawnee Wilson, played by Jesse Scott, also has only 6 credits on IMDb, but no producer credits. She's, you know, platinum blonde in a mini skirt. An ample bosom, we'll say, and she's just kind of bouncing up and down, jumping like, I won. And Sam kind of walks up to congratulate her, and she just kind of stops. And he's like, no, don't stop. You won. And Carla protests, like, she spilled all of the drinks. And MC's like, who cares? Look at her.
Okay. So there was all this advertisement that they were going to go for something with a little more depth from Miss Boston Barmaid. And in the end, Sam gets his wish. Diane, it's Diane's worst nightmare. Nothing changes.
Yeah, exactly. and Sam, he's vindicated. Because he's like, it shows that people can look past rules and regulations and see the inner diamond. And she's just like, I want a shiny new car.
I know you did, sweetheart.
He's like, but before the contest is completely over, they're like, how about I give a hand for our Miss Congeniality? Cheers his own Carla. And he gives her a trophy, a sizable trophy. Uh-huh. And he's like, that's a pretty big trophy. Are you sure you have room for it? And Carla just into the microphone, I'll make room. And she just, again, zeroing in on Cliff, she's like, Mr. Mailman.
Oh, Mr. Mailman.
And Cliff has to bolt, run through the crowd up the stairs to Melville's with her in hot pursuit with the trophy pointed at his button.
I know. And who knows what the reaction of John Allen Hill will be.
Yeah. After everybody's clearing out, Rebecca walks back over and sees that Norm isn't at his seat. Is he in the bathroom? What is he now? Is he, you know, paying the parking meter? No. She's like, can he actually be painting the office? And at that point, we hear the sound of what sounds like kind of a muffled explosion, and Norm kind of shouting, and Rebecca, Woody, Paul, and everybody available kind of rushes into the back office. They throw open the door, and everything, the walls, the tarps, the furniture, the swordfish on the wall, all of the everything, including Norm and his clothes and his face and his arms and his skin, it's all white. It's all just been blasted this cream white color. And Norm is just like, relax, relax. It actually dries much lighter than this. And there's the payoff to the teaser.
Yeah, no, it's funny. You're like, you've got the Carla Cliff story, but then you've also got the Norm and Rebecca Paint story. And then you've got the Sam, you know, being, you know, just, you know, with his just indignation about the changes to the contest. So there's like 3 different plots circling around there that have to pay off in that last 3 minutes there.
Yeah. And they do it because that plot doesn't need much more than that. So
no, not at all. Not at all.
Yeah. Funny episode, lots of good stuff in this. I found myself struggling to come up with my home run, and I'll get to that in a second, because there were just like so many really good gags. Like nothing like leapt head and shoulders over the top, but just the fact that there were so much really like funny jokes, like not like mind-blowing or really hysterical, but just really really good, really solid. And there was just so many of them that it elevated the episode a lot.
Yeah, I would say this, if there were not as many laugh out loud moments. I don't know that this episode would be, you know, maybe necessarily as good, because it just feels like it's a lot of, like we said, the Boston Barmaid contest again out of nowhere. You've got Cliff somehow doing painting again, and you've got all these little sort of disjointed moments. But if they didn't infuse it with a lot of these laugh out loud jokes, might not be as memorable of an episode. And it's also very slapstick. But because I think the sum of this episode is much greater than the parts, I think. And I think it all adds up to something that's really, really funny.
Right, right. Okay, so now we get to Norm's tab. And I mentioned that the teaser, what he negotiates the 400 beers with Rebecca, was going to throw my whole thing out of whack for a bit. Okay. Now, as I have been doing this tab, this has not been actually the number of beers that Norm pays for or drinks or something like that. It's the number of beers we see him or directly hear him say that he has drunk, whether he's in Cheers or not. When he says he's doing this for 400 beers, I'm going to basically, the beers that we see him drink from this point on will count towards that, will count as part of that 400. And then whatever might be left over at the end of the season, at the end of the series finale, will be tacked on in addition to that. But if he passes 400 in the next two seasons, we'll see that where that goes. Now he had one beer on the bar before he made the 400, and then he had five throughout the season. So I'm saying he had six beers in this episode, so he has 395 kind of left, like on this little order thing that I'm calculating separately. But as what we have seen him drink so far is at 918. So for the rest of the episodes, I'm going to have kind of three figures. How many did he drink that episode? How many has he drunk total so far? And how much is left of the 400 that was calculated? So
that's true. Yeah.
Thank you for making the last 55 episodes of the show more complicated.
Well, I guess it could have happened earlier in the show. At least it's happening in the last quarter.
There you go. There you
go. Well, then I keep thinking in season 11, you're going to get to the King of Beers episode, which will be a whole different thing.
I don't even remember. I'm not sure how I'll get to that one when he's working at the brewery, but because then there's also the one when Kelly is working at the bar and she's erasing beers. I'll figure these things out later.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's like, it gets a little surreal in the final couple seasons. Sometimes they throw out logic, but it's okay. It's funny.
They and I know that like the cast and the writers have actually spoken to that, like in the last season and last two seasons, really the last one, they went with a lot more broad and silly things, and just because they've actually said part of it was the cast didn't want to memorize as many lines. They didn't want the dialogue to be driving the thing. They wanted more kind of
physical stuff,
weird set pieces, things like that, because it was easier for them to perform than memorizing so much dialogue, which is a shame, but credit the show, it's still really funny.
Also, you know, after a decade of memorizing dialogue, I can see where it gets, you know, tiring after a while, but I get it.
Who is your employee of the month or employee of the week?
My employee of the week is Carla in this episode, just because I think Rhea Perlman, I mean, she gets the lion's share of the episode. Yeah. And we get to see her not just be Carla, but we get to see her put on several different personas. You know, we get to see her be, you know, the nice, charming Carla. We get to see her be the nasty bully Carla. We get to see her do that wonderful story about Cora, the waitress to Frasier, that we almost buy. We get to see her do great physical comedy. We just get it all from Rhea Perlman in this episode.
We get to see suffering anguish Carla.
Yeah.
I completely agree. Like, it's a Carla episode and she knocks it out of the park. My runner up would be Norm, but that's a distant runner up. Like, it wasn't that much of a competition.
My runner up, I think, would have been Sam, just because Ted Danson gets a couple of really good laugh out loud moments in this.
Yeah. And to that point, like, I have such a nostalgic fondness and love for Sam's. What about the bikini round? And the way he gets shut down by that instantly. Yeah. But I do think my home run is just the entire sequence of her rubbing Cliff's back and then his feet, and like the way that's dragged out over like different segments and everything, just like her facial expressions is like she's like going through this process and how much it's painful. That I think is my runner up. And then, that is my home run. That's my favorite part.
Yeah.
The bikini round line from Sam would be a runner up. And then also when Sam goes, that would be the year Diane won, was just the commenting.
Yeah. I think mine is, and I've gone back and forth with this all day thinking about it, but I don't know, the one that just, because when I watched it again, it just makes me laugh out loud because the way Kirstie Alley delivers it, it's the line about getting the office half as white as Cliff's spot. I just think that it's just a visual that you don't want to have. And just the way that she delivers it is so funny. But also, I think runner up to that would be I won the shiny red car. I know you did, sweetheart. Cause that one, I always remember that from this episode, just cause I think it's hysterical too. And then also the Hanover Maribel story is great. I mean, there's just, there are, as you think about it, there's a lot of gems in this episode that really, really work.
Yeah. Thank you, Brandon, for coming back on the show. Why don't you tell our listeners where you can be found when you're not on Cheers Cast?
Yeah, Front Row Classics Podcast. You can find me anywhere you find your podcasts, on Apple, Spotify, Audible, anywhere. And we're also on nprillinois.org. And just anywhere where you can find your podcast. If you're into classic film, we are the destination to be.
Very nice. Very cool. Thanks again. And thanks to all of you who listen to Cheers Cast and support the show by liking and sharing on social media and leaving comments on the website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can also support the Fire and Water Podcast Network on Patreon. Cheers Cast is supported by the Right On Network and Jeff Enrich Presents Unpacking the Power of Power Pack. Go to patreon.com/FW Podcast to support your favorite show on the Fire and Water Network. Thanks everyone for listening. And until next time, I won, I won, I won, I won, I won, I won, I won.
Norm, I gotta ask you a question.
All right.
You know, over the years, I've been pretty bad to Clavin. I've done some things that maybe I shouldn't have. Called him names, punctured his tires, set fire to his hair.
What's the question now?
Do you think he noticed?
You made this guy eat a bug once. That's a birthday the guy's never going to forget.
Okay, I'll send him flowers.
Carla, that bug laid eggs in his stomach.
Yeah, that was kind of a bonus.